Good morning. Welcome to our continuing Bible study in Luke chapter 23. And we're in that point of time in the scripture leading up to the crucifixion. Jesus he's left the praetorium. They've taken him from the praetorium. They've laid the cross on one Simon, a Cyrenian, that we looked at in a previous lesson there, and what might be happening with him later on. And so he's on this path from the judgment hall, the praetorium, and on his way to Golgotha, the last few steps that he was going to take in this manifestation. And so we'll begin reading in verse 26, and we're going to read down through verse 31 today. And as they led him away, they laid hold on one Simon, a Cyrenian. That was that region just out of Libya in North Africa, close to Tripoli. And coming out of the country, and laid on him the cross that he might bear it after Jesus. And there followed him a great company of people and of women, which also bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus turned unto them and said, Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming in which they shall say, Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bear, and the paps which never gave suck. Then shall they begin to say unto the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? What a terrible prophecy that he foretells there, and not the first time he'd mentioned that. We'll cover that a little bit here later, and he mentioned that in Luke chapter 19, if you'll recall. And so today's lesson is titled "Jerusalem in Heaps," and that's what Jeremiah called it. And he was foretelling the fall of Jerusalem in the time of the Babylonians and that era. But we find many the same things happening here, just a repetition, and for the same reasons. They went away from God. They went to idol worship. They turned from Him. They were punished for that. And in Jerusalem 6:6 it says, hew down trees and cast a mount against Jerusalem. They cut down all the trees around there and used them to wage war against them. And they built, you know, in Jerusalem they had these three layers of walls around the city, and except for the places where there was a real steep slope off into a valley where it was tough terrain to approach the city to attack it. And so the Romans just kind of filled it all in, and they built kind of ramps up to the wall in 70 A.D., when this invasion took place that we're talking about here today. And but because of idolatry, God used the Nebuchadnezzar in a punitive way against Jerusalem and the nation, and then he turned around later and punished them for that. And the same thing is happening here in the time of Luke in this gospel of the atoning death of Christ. And you know, for the most part, the people were caught up in this religious folly of works and pretending to keep the law. And as Norman mentions, I don't think very many people brought sin offerings. I didn't. I'm not admitting to anything. And you know, they waited centuries for the Messiah to come, and when he came, they rejected him. And their preconceived idea of the Messiah was to lead an army and overthrow the Romans. And instead, he attacked the temple and cleaned it out. You made it a den of thieves. He threw out the money changers and those that sold livestock. And he attacked their religion instead of the Romans. That's not right. And he condemned the religious works of the Jews and verbally assaulted the chief priests and the rulers of the Jews for their, "You worship me with your lips, but your heart is far from me." That's not our idea of the Messiah. You should be on our side. So he wasn't attacking who they thought he should attack, so doom for him. And he tells them, though, that here's the doom that's coming to you here in Romans 23:28, and back in Luke 19 we read the same thing. It's interesting that the tactics of the invaders are almost exactly the same. It's almost like they studied history and say, well, if you want to sack Rome here or Jerusalem, here's how to do it. It's already, the battle plan has already been successfully used, so we're going to do it again. Hew down trees and cast a mount against Jerusalem. And so the words that were spoken by Christ, as recorded in our text today, gives many details, both physical and spiritual, context. And he says, "Don't weep for me. I'm going to be fine. 3 days, I'm going to rise again. Weep for yourselves, because this place is doomed. And because you knewest not the time of thy visitation." That's what tells us in Luke chapter 19, verse 44. And, you know, Luke 19 and 23 are just real closely linked in this same issue regarding the state of affairs in Jerusalem and in religion and the fulfillment of the gospel. The time was coming. The day shall come upon thee. You know, in Jeremiah, when he wrote about the Babylonians and the siege that they had back then, in Jeremiah 14, he says, there was none to bury them. Famine and sword killed them. Luke 19, let's read back there. Let's turn back to Luke 19, 41 there. And as Jesus made that triumphant entrance into Jerusalem, remember when we studied that, he came down from the Mount of Olives, and you know, during the siege of Jerusalem, there was Josephus recorded there was like 1,000 Roman soldiers stationed on the Mount of Olives. They were just jammed up there waiting to attack. And he said when he was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it. And he said, "If thou had known, even thou, at least in this thy day, the day when I'm actually standing here in front of you, looking you in the eye and preaching the gospel and raising people from the dead and healing and giving sight to the blind and allowing the deaf to hear and all those things that he expounded from the Old Testament, the things that he actually did. If thou at least in this thy day, if you had known the things which belong to thy peace, but now they're hid from thine eyes." And he was talking about the peace between one that's born again and God, not national wartime peace like what's not going on over there in Israel right now. They have a little war over there right now. And he says, "For the day shall come upon thee that thine enemy shall cast a trench about thee and compass thee around and keep thee in on every side and shall lay thee even with the ground and thy children within thee. And they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another, because thou knewest not the time of thy visitation. You know, John wrote in chapter 1, he says, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. In verse 45, then he came into temple, he went into the temple, and he began to cast out them that sold therein and them that bought, saying unto them, it is written, my house is the house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. And he taught daily in the temple. But the chief priests and the scribes and the chief of the people sought to destroy him. His own received him not. You know, so it's no surprise when he later says, they sought to destroy him. He says, destroy this temple. In 3 days, I'll raise it up again. And they said, this temple took like 46 years to build, and you're going to raise it up in 3 days. So they had this over. They didn't have any idea what he was talking about. In Luke chapter 21, speaking of that temple, some spoke of the temple, how it was adorned with goodly stones and gifts. And he said, as for these things which ye behold, the days will come in which there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. So he keeps adding drips and drabs of this things that are going to befall Jerusalem in 37 years. It's not that long away that these things are going to occur. All according to his purpose and all according to his timing. And destroy this temple and in 3 days I'll raise it up. What a picture. What a great description we have of the view that God had of the goings on. The temple had been made into a den of thieves, and the purpose and design of it, they had destroyed. It was physically there, but the intent of it was destroyed. The purpose of it was destroyed by the people that had no knowledge really of God or grace or the gospel. They just turned it into a thing. They just turned it into a ceremonial showpiece. It was of no spiritual value the way that they were utilizing it. It had all the, it was a lot like religion today. It had all of the surface external characteristics. They said the Jesus word, they said the Messiah word, they said the God word, and they had the place where the Gentiles couldn't go no further, and they had the Holy of Holies, and they had the all the boxes where you could put your money in, and the court of the women, and all these things that were originally designed to be a part of declaring the gospel of grace were all just turned into things that you do or you don't do, or places you can go or you can't go, and only certain ones are allowed here and not there, and if you pay me enough money, we'll abracadabra you and forgive your forgive your sins. They destroyed it. Spiritually, it was gone, and it was only a matter of time before it was gone physically as well. And so we have that revelation from Luke 19 and Luke 21, and then in Luke 23, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children, for behold, the days are coming, 37 years, in which they shall say, boy, you're just going to wish that you didn't even have any kids. You're going to wish that you were just buried, that you were, hills fall on us, cover us. If they do these things in a green tree to the very Christ that was standing there, the Romans and the people are going to do these things to a green tree, what will they do in this dead old dried up stick? It's going to burn up like crazy. So some things that we want to consider today, there are certain ones that are identified as they here in the two texts. First, the they that in Luke, back in our text in Luke 19:42, which alludes to Christ and his atoning work, saying, if thou had known, even thou, at least in this day, the things which belong to thy peace, but now they are hid from your eyes. You didn't know them, and without revelation you can't know them. And when it gets to this point, it's too late. There's going to be some judgment coming. They're hid from your eyes. Secondly, we have the daughters of Jerusalem that are foretold what they're going to say during this time in 70 AD is when this actually comes to pass, 37 years later. These daughters of Jerusalem, these women that are weeping and lamenting at his, as he's going along on his way to be crucified, and they're going to say, oh, blessed are those that don't have kids. I have a kid, but I wish I didn't. And I wish I was dead. I wish I was covered up. And lastly, the third reference is to the people who, along with the chief priests and the elders that were gathered together to do whatever the Lord determined before to be done, they demanded the Romans execute. And the Romans were seemingly connived into executing Jesus to appease the Jewish leaders. But, you know, Pilate, he gave two or three attempts at saying, he's not done anything worthy of death. But then he went ahead and did it anyway. And then he had him beat, had him scourged. But all these things were happening according to the purpose of him who willeth all things to happen after the counsel of his own will from eternity. I find no fault. He's done nothing worthy of death. And all the people yelled, crucify him, crucify him. He says, okay. Let it be on your head. And that's what they said. Norm brought that out this morning. It's on our head, us and our children. We take responsibility for this act. Away with this man and release unto us Barabbas. And we covered that. So, as we're looking at this, Jesus is walking along or trotting along this path to his execution, and this multitude of people and the women that's described here in Luke 23, as he's given over to a certain crucifixion by the command of the Romans, you know, he's saying, this God is going to use these same Romans to punish you guys. You're using them to have me killed. Well, God's going to use them to have you killed. The Romans are carrying out what God before determined to be done. It's what tells us in Acts 4. The people, Herod and Pontius Pilate, all these people were gathered together to do what he had before determined to be done. But he said, that's going to happen, but it's not going to be good for you by whom it was done. The green tree again typifies Christ versus the dry tree, which typified the Jews as religiously dead. So dead they were dried up. They're like those bones there in Ezekiel's valley of the dry bones. He said they're not just dry, they're like very dry. They're just like dust. No visible sign of life. That's what that metaphor is for. If they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? But you know, in the midst of all this, it's just the wonderful miracle of the gospel. The miracle of a remnant according to the election of grace, revealed in time, a people foreknown of God, predestinated and called and justified by the death of the Son, ready to be manifested when it pleased God. Many of these people were there. Many of these people were in that crowd that followed him along. Many were the ones that said, crucify him, crucify him, because they, like all of us before we're born again, were at enmity against God. And so it's no great marvel that they would say, we won't have this man over us. Crucify him, crucify him. And, you know, we remember that there was, it was commanded that if you were a Jew, you had to attend these three feasts every year. If you're a male Jew, and so every Passover there was millions of Jews that came to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover feast. And it's no different right at this time of this writing in Luke. We had Simon the Cyrene. He was from Libya. And people from every nation, people from all over the world were there that were proselytes and Jews, as it tells us in Acts chapter 2. This crowd following Jesus from the Praetorium to Golgotha, and right along behind him are two thieves, mocking and shouting at him. they cast the same in their teeth that said when they were crucified, if thou be the Christ, save us and save yourself and come down off the cross. And yeah, you're no God, you're nothing, you're dying just like us. And then the big change for the one. But you know, as Christ was going along and he had this multitude around him, I was telling Norm, so I think he looked out there and he could see, I'm dying for your sins, and you, 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 and you. You're mine, you're mine, you're mine. God gave you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and you. He gave all of you to me to redeem. He could look out in that crowd and see them. He could look behind him and see one of those thieves. Said, you're mine too. Even though you're cursing me right now. Is, you know, I like what Lance said. You know, he just had gentle things to say. He didn't curse the world. He didn't curse the people and say, you guys are all... He said, when he came into Jerusalem, he looked over it and wept because of unbelief. You knew not the time of thy visitation. You didn't know when I was here. And he didn't have anything terrible to say except, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. All these gentle things that, as Lance pointed out, that he said when he could have knocked them all down and killed them all and turned them all into charcoal and walked away and rose on, went back to heaven and all those things. But he just said, someone has to pay. Sin must be paid for. And I'm paying for yours. I'm on my way to do that. I'm the lamb slain from before the foundation of the world. So even as they rejected him and he wept over the blindness of the people and the fake religion and the worship that was by lips only and not the heart, he wept over what was to become, over Jerusalem, his city, what it was meant to be and what sin and the fall had turned it into. What opposite. It just turns out that sin generates things that are just the opposite to God in enmity with him. And so they took those things that were supposed to be telling the gospel and declaring grace and turned them into useless vanity and works. And in time, you know, the Pilate, he did some atrocious things in the temple and with some of the people. He had some people slain and mingled their blood with their sacrifices. Remember we read about that? And all, you know, the Jews were getting all these things adding up that were against their religion, and they didn't like being under the control of Rome, and so they were kind of in this mutinous mode all the time, seditious. That's what they finally accused Jesus of, was he said he was king. He's a seditious person. And so finally the Romans had enough, and they sent Vespasian and his son Titus into the country to quell all this unrest. They went to Galilee first and killed a lot of people there. And then they went to Gadara. And they stomped out all the insurrectionists in Gadara. Remember the maniac of Gadara? And Jesus went across the Sea of Galilee to that, just for that one guy, because he said, "You're mine." And from Gadara, they encircled Jerusalem, and you know that doesn't happen in secret. The people, they all said, "Oh, we better get inside the walls so we'll be safe." So they encircled, they encamped them round about, just like Jesus said in his version there in Luke 19 and Luke 23. They did what they called, they besieged them. And they just blocked, nobody could come in and no one could go out. And three days before the Passover in April 70 AD, the siege of Jerusalem began. Jerusalem would be in heaps. The days will come upon thee, thine enemies shall cast a trench about thee, encompass thee around, and keep thee in on every side. No one could go in and no one could go out. And remember, there's like millions of Jews in there because it's Passover. So it's not like just the normal population of Jerusalem, but it's got Jews from every part of the world are there for this Passover. No one could come in and no one could go out. And for the time, you know, for a time, it wasn't that bad. But eventually, food began to run out. And armed mobs of gangs prowled the city. It's kind of like Baltimore and Portland and Seattle. Just going around looting and pillaging at will with no consequences. There wasn't anybody there to make them behave because everybody was against everybody. Nobody had any friends at this point. They broke into homes to loot food and valuables. And if they didn't find any, they would torture the people that lived there to make them talk. And if they looked well fed, like me, they would say, "You obviously have a larder. Where is it?" And if you were rail thin, kind of weak looking, they'd torture you anyway, just in case. And so there wasn't any right answer. You couldn't say, "Yeah, I have food, go ahead and take it," or, "No, I don't have any food, so it doesn't matter." They killed them. They tortured them and then killed them anyway, just because they could. And there was no moral compass. There was nothing of civilization left in there. People began to die. Criminals killed at will with no repercussions. People swallowed their valuables sometimes. If you had some gold coins or jewelry, you just guzzle them down so that the thieves wouldn't find them. But they got onto that, and so they just killed them, and then they did exploratory surgery. See if you had swallowed any jewels or coins or whatever. Some of them, early on in the siege, sometimes the Romans would let them, if they could escape the city, they would come out, and the Romans would say, okay, so you're not part of this, you may go your way, go back to wherever, Antioch or Syria or wherever. But they would swallow their stuff, and then they would go out when the Romans released them, then they go out in the bush and evacuate and get their money back and go their way. But pretty soon the Romans said, hey, you know what? They're not giving up in the city, so these people that are coming out, let's just kill them and crucify them and post them in the valley here and everywhere so that they can be seen from the city walls, and that'll be a object lesson to the people in the city that you should give up. And the people in the city said, if we give up, that's what they're going to do to us, so we're not doing that either. So just the atrociousness of the whole thing is beyond our capability to understand and believe and to imagine in our current stage where we are right now. And eventually the number of dead people from starvation after months goes by. Months are going by. People are starving. And some of them have money, but there's nothing to buy. They bought up all the grain and the food, and they bought the stuff that you and I would not think of putting on the menu. And it just got worse and worse and worse, and people were, if you were old and not in good shape, you were dying, and eventually the number of dead eclipsed the ability of those inside to deal with, and they just ended up throwing the bodies over the wall and down into the valley. And it got so bad that even Vespasian went by there and he just wept. The Roman general and his son Titus, they just looked at the mayhem that was going on there, and they just said, why won't they give up and just surrender and just, we'll be done with all this stuff? But they wouldn't. Starvation and murder and mayhem was the norm now, and cannibalism began to occur because there was nothing. You think that, nah, we would never do that. In Josephus recorded that 1.1 million Jews were killed in that siege, and not all by the Romans. A lot of them were killed by their own people. 97,000 at the end of it, 97,000 were enslaved and sent away. At the time, Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, encompassed about the area of 1 square mile, which is, doing the math, was 3,097,600 square yards. So a square yard is 9 feet by 9 feet. 1.1 million Jews dead. So one dead Jew for every 3 square yards, if you do the math and figure out about every other square yard there was a dead Jew for that, if you do the math. It's like a lot of dead people in a pretty small area. So you can just imagine the scope of the awfulness. And you know, as we noted in a previous lesson, that Herod had greatly enhanced the temple with gold plating and silver and all kinds of wonderful decorations and things to display his greatness. And when the Romans, when they finally entered the city, they set fire to the city and the temple. And surface gold was looted by the soldiers, and then the fire caused it to melt and run between the cracks of the stones. And so the soldiers took them little short swords, and they pried the stones of the temple apart with their swords to get at the gold that had melted and ran down between the cracks. Not one stone will be left upon another. That's what Jesus said. Jerusalem shall be in heaps. In Luke 21:5 says, "And some spake of the temple, how it was adorned with goodly stones and gifts, gold and silver. For these things which ye behold, the days will come in which there shall not be left one stone upon another." He was through with their religious fakery. He said, "You turn this into a den of thieves, tearing it down, it's not coming back. We're not building it again. It's destroyed." Awful beyond belief. Nothing compared to eternity without Christ. You know, in 2 Kings, to show you that there's nothing new and that all this stuff is just gets repeated, when Ben-Hadad sieged Samaria in 2 Kings 6:25, you can go to your Bibles and read this. It was awful. "There was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver." The head of a donkey, the part that they usually just throw away, bury, haul off to the boneyard. 4 pieces of silver, and the fourth part of a cab of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver. Now, I don't know who's going to have dove's dung on their menu after church today. And we wouldn't pay 5 pieces of silver for it. I'm always washing that off by the orchard. They're always pooping on my pickup all the time. And I wash that off. I'm not eating that for lunch. But that's the level of desperation that was going on. And it gets worse in 2 Kings chapter 6, we just read that part about them buying all these atrocious things because they were starving. But in 2 Kings chapter 6, we're about out of time. I'll just quickly give you the cliff notes of it. A couple of women got together, and one of them said, "Hey, you know what? If we eat your son tomorrow, or today, we can eat mine tomorrow." So the first woman says, "Okay." So we boiled my son and ate him. And then the next day, that the other woman says, "I don't know what you're talking about." And so she went to the king and said, "Hey, you know what? We agreed to eat our children, and then we ate mine." And then she's like gone back on her word. The king said, "What aileth thee?" And she answered, "This woman said unto me, give me thy son that we may eat him today, and we'll eat my son tomorrow." You know, we just can't imagine that level of desperation. But it happened, and it was recorded in 2 Kings. Same thing happening here in Luke 23, where he's saying this is what's going to happen in 70 AD. And you're just going to say, you're just going to wish you didn't have any children. How awful. 37 years later, that's going to come to pass. But you know, through this, there was that election according to the remnant of grace. God looked out there, and some of his people were there. There was Simon the Cyrenian bearing the cross, and the thief behind him, and the centurion at the cross later that said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." And you know, in Acts chapter 2, we're out of time here, but all these people got together 50 days later at the Feast of Pentecost, and Peter was preaching the gospel to all these Jews that were still there, and the crucifixion was gone, and Jesus was resurrected, and he preached to them the gospel and said, "This same Jesus which you have crucified is Lord and King." And they said, "Oh, what shall we do?" And he said, "Repent and be baptized, every one of you." And that day there was 3,000 of them added to the church, and the Lord added daily such as should be saved to the church. Acts chapter 2, 36 through 47. So out of that multitude that he was walking by, that was gaping on him, and there was 3,000. There was more. And I'm sure he was looking out there and saying, I'm going for you. With his stripes we're healed. Remnant according to the election of grace. So we'll stop there until next time.